The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free ARFCOM do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begins. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the stick of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free ARFCOM starts now.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, fellow ARFCOMers out there in ARFCOM land. Radio Free ARFCOM starts right now. I am your host, John Gold. I will be sitting at the microphone this evening as we go over a bevy of topics. Today's focus tonight, well, actually tonight's focus, is on the ATF. They need no introduction. We all know who they are. And they have been in the news for a couple of different things lately, and we're going to talk all about that stuff. But we have a few things to get to first before we get to that stuff. We're going to jump right in head first. As usual, we start the show off with the effervescent Joe DeBurgolis. Joe, how are you today?
Hi, John. Good as always. Always good to be here.
It is fantastic to have you on, as usual. I love talking with you, getting my bi-weekly fix of direct action information. As everyone knows, Joe DeBurgolis is an NRA board member, an avid ARFCOMer, his site staff now, and his name, his screen name on AR15.com is Direct Action. We had a couple of things we wanted to talk about, Joe, and then we're going to get right on with John Fraser. First off, I wanted to talk about the StopTraver.org website, www.StopTraver.org. Can you just tell our listeners just a little bit about that website?
Most certainly, John. It's an effort by the NRA, Institute for Legislative Action, which basically allows those who do not want to see President Obama's appointee become confirmed as the head of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. He's got a long history of looking to ban the private ownership or private sale of firearms. And if you go to StopTraver.org, it's a great site the NRA put up, and you'll see there how you become active. As you know, John, we try to do a lot of the grassroots advocacy here on Radio Free ARFCOM. And there you'll find a variety of things for you to do. You'll be able to educate yourself on the reason why we need to make sure that our voices are heard. And then you can actually go to a program, if you will, that will allow you to contact your elected officials and let your voice be heard. It's a very streamlined process. It's a great thing, and I think Chris Cox and company have done a great thing for us by putting this and making this available.
Yeah, I actually visited it last week, and I was amazed at how simple it is to actually send a letter to your senator. They will actually do it for you. You just have to type your name in, type your address, your information, so they know it's a real person, and they will fire the letter off for you. You don't even have to pay postage. You don't have to do anything.
It's a great method. It really is. It's something, one more outreach that we have, that we have joined forces with the great folks at the Institute for Legislative Action, and I think ARFCOM should take a look at it. We posted it up in the NRA activism thread, and I think it's something that we should all get behind and take a few minutes to let our voices be heard.
I agree. I agree completely. Now, the three-gun event is booked up completely. Every slot is full, correct?
we have a great response. We had a great response, and we're moving forward. We've got a fantastic array of projects we're working on. We'll be announcing those, John, as we go along the next couple of weeks and months. The competitors are enthusiastic. I can't tell you how many instant messages and personal mail and emails and telephone calls I'm receiving from our fellow off-commerce. They're going to go down there to either spectate or participate. There's still a variety of things. The competition has, best of my knowledge, been filled. There's always one or two cancellations, so if you're still interested, make sure you at least join the waiting list. But there's going to be a variety of shooting events that relate and are around what's going on with the competition itself. So you'll be able to put some lead down range. You'll be able to probably see a lot of the hardware that from our sponsors on AR15.com. You get to meet your fellow ARFCOMers. Hopefully you'll see me and John and the rest of the group down there having a grand old time.
Yeah, should be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. I know there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes still, securing ever more prizes for the prize table. So we appreciate that as ARFCOMers, all the work that goes on behind the scenes. Moving right along, Joe, let's talk a little bit about the Warrior Angels project.
Most certainly, John. It's great. We kicked it off. We have a lot of response. We're as most people know, and if you don't know, we're doing a fundraiser, if you will, effort to support Warrior Angels, great group of military spouses down out of Fort Bragg, which basically helps out those who are stricken or going through the process of being treated for breast cancer. It's a breast cancer awareness organization. And what we've done is had a little fundraiser going in concert with the great folks at LaRue who are offering breast awareness pink dillos that can be purchased for a certain amount. We both understand, John, it's a bad economy out there. This way, if people give a couple dollars, to give $5, $10 to the cause, they'll be entered into a sweepstakes that will allow them a chance of winning a couple of these dillos and some ancillary prizes. So it's going real well. We really appreciate the support. If you get an opportunity to chip in, we appreciate it. If you can, as they always say, prayers are free. Just keep us in your prayers.
Yeah, it's a great cause. And I've been really kind of swept away by the response we've gotten from ARFCOMers. ARFCOMers traditionally have always stepped up to the plate for a good cause, and this has definitely not been the exception. It's going to be really cool for everyone that collects dillos. This is your chance to get an extremely limited edition run of dillos. Maybe your wife or girlfriend doesn't have a dillo. This is perfect for her. They'll be pink in support of breast cancer awareness, and it's just a great thing. If someone wants to know a little bit more about it, Joe, is the thread in the NRA activism forum?
It's in LaRue and it's in GD. So it's both there and they cross posted. I want to say when we got a spare minute here, MDW, a brother out there keeps making sure that it's in the top 10 threads. I got to say thanks to all my friends out there who are constantly there, John, that support whatever I'm doing. And it's just heartwarming to know that ARFCOM truly is a family. And I each and every day never... I'm just astounded at the outpouring of support and generosity that the site has.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love it. Moving right along, Joe, we are starting now with the AR15.com newsletter to do an action alert each month, something that gun owners and gun rights activists, the average guy, we're giving them an opportunity, something they can do each month from basically their own home at their computer that will actually promote and help and further our Second Amendment rights. We're working hand-in-hand with the NRA on this. This month is the StopTraver.org. You'll see that in the AR15.com newsletter if you're a subscriber. If you're not a subscriber, please go to AR15.com, the main page, right on the homepage. It's right near the top left. It says AR15.com newsletter. You just type in your email address. We've had some really great giveaways, giving away a lot of free stuff on the newsletter, and you cannot win if you are not subscribed. So please go and subscribe. So I'm just looking forward for these action alerts to give the average guy, Joe, a chance to actually stand up for his own rights and not let someone else do it for him.
I think it's great. It's a great concept we came up with. We're going to reach out. We're going to invigorate ARFCOM, get them flowing in a positive direction. Only a few minutes of the time. We've done it before on a variety of campaigns that we undertook through the site itself. This way, we're going to go out there, the action alerts, side-by-side with the great folks out of ILA, and get our people pointing in the right direction, hopefully sign them up, get them going, and push them out. It's a great thing that we're doing, John, and I hope everybody puts arms around this and really gets behind it, because it's ARFCOM needs, and we have made some great strides, but there's a lot of things, and you got a great group of guests coming up. They're going to talk about the reason why we need to become engaged in the process. My good friend John Frazier is coming up, and he's just a wealth of information, and he's going to be basically a point person there and inform us on a lot of good things that ILA's doing. But we need to make sure that ARFCOM's tuned in, engaged, and ready for our grassroots advocacy campaign. And I think we're going to do that with our ARFCOM Action Alerts, our AAA, if you will.
Yep, I think it's going to be fantastic. Last but not least, let's talk about the ARFCOM Freedom Force, Joe. It's something that we have just started to put together. And for all our listeners out there, we are looking for you. We are looking for you to be a local correspondent for Radio Free ARFCOM in your own local area. Just if a big news story were to break, or there was some significant Second Amendment news that broke in your area, we want you to come help us be a part of the show. So if you are interested in this, and this is open to anybody, you don't have to be a journalism major. You don't have to work in radio or television or newspaper. If you do, that's all the better. But just anyone interested and maybe being a part of the show, being a local correspondent for us, we call it the ARFCOM Freedom Force. Please contact me via ar15.com, instant message. Of course, my screen name is Radio Free ARFCOM. And I think we're going to try to expand the Freedom Force, Joe, into not only reporting on Second Amendment news, but also maybe doing a little political action as the cases arise.
Well, anybody will tell you, with the AAA, you're going to need some ground pounders, and that's what the Freedom Force is going to be. We need to engage the people, get them involved, and then in the respective state, at their respective gun club, go out there and either report on something or give us first-hand accounts what the experience is, and we're going to mobilize our force into something that's really going to be something special, John. It's everybody who's basically come to the front so far on this is been very enthusiastic, and I'm looking forward to great results. So if you're interested, make sure you get a hold of John. You can always get a hold of me as well, and we'll point you in the right direction. But this is another great initiative that ARFCOM has taken on for 2011. And just in time for the elections in 2012.
Yep, and Joe, I just want to thank you for taking some time out of your busy, busy schedule. I know how busy you are and the miles you put in every day. I want to thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to having you again on, as usual, next time we air.
Great, John. Have a great show. Say hello to my good friends, and thanks again, guys, for all the support that you show the Warriors Angels and all the rest of the causes. I look forward to helping all and looking forward to talk to everyone in the near future. Have a great show, John.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Before we go on to our next guest, I want to talk about a couple of things. Just do a little housekeeping here. Remind everybody, we do have a Facebook page, Radio Free ARFCOM on Facebook. Please go join us. Become a friend. Stay up to date on all the latest shows and what we have going on. I mentioned the AR15.com newsletter before. Please, if you haven't subscribed to that, you are missing out on the very best e-newsletter that goes out on the internet for gun owners, period. There's nothing like it. Just go to ar15.com homepage. For our podcasts for the show, a lot of people have been asking me, where's the podcast site? It is radiofreearfcom.wordpress.com. You can catch all of our shows that we've done in the past. They're all on there, neatly organized for you and ready at a click of a mouse. Now, one more thing before we go to our next guest. It is time, this time of year, every year, for the NRA Board of Directors elections. There are 75 members on the NRA Board. Each year, 25 of those members are up for re-election. Now, AR15.com has a committee, and they go through and they find candidates who are very pro-tactical rifle, pro-AR15, pro-AK-47, not quote-unquote FUD gunners. These are people the committee has decided promote the best the best chance and the best ideas and are very pro AR-15. So I'm just going to run down these list of candidates. I would ask everybody, please go to the NRA activism forum. You will see the thread authored by the one and only Goat Boy called NRA Board of Directors Endorsements. It talks about each of the candidates that AR15.com is endorsing for the board this year. It gives you a brief rundown of them. As usual, we encourage everyone to do your own research and form your own choices, but these are the people that we here at AR15.com endorse, and we wholly support and back their candidacy for the NRA board. The first one is William H. Bill Allen. The second one is Peter J. Prince, Alan D. Coors, William H. Daly, Howard J. Walter, and Linda Walker. So please go to the NRA activism forum. Look for the thread by Goat Boy entitled NRA Board of Directors. If you are a voting member of the NRA, please, please, please vote for these candidates. There are a lot of quote-unquote celebrities running this year, and celebrities don't necessarily have our best interests in mind. A lot of times they are there promoting their own interests. These candidates are there promoting our interests. So please check them out. Do your own research and vote with your heart. But these are the candidates we endorse. All right, let's go straight to our next guest. I'm really honored to have this guy on. His name is John Fraser. He's the director of the NRA ILA Research and Information Division. This guy is at the pointy end of the stick, as it were, when it comes to the NRA's legal actions, their announcements, and the things that the NRA does, the actual rubber meets the road things the NRA does to help gun owners and gun rights. John, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Pleasure to be on, John, and thank you very much for the glowing lead, and I hope I can live up to it.
Oh, I'm sure you won't have a problem. Now, there were two main things I wanted to talk with you about tonight. The first is the ATF working group decision on the importation of shotguns. And to me, you hear this working group, and it's this like mysterious cabal somewhere in some closed conference chamber that's just seems to be willy-nilly just deciding what they're going to allow and what they're not going to allow, and they're able to do this. They're able to make this law.
Well, that's absolutely right. Now, just to be clear, it's a proposal. Nothing has become law yet, and there's still plenty of opportunity for gun owners and the Congress to act. But what's going on is consistent with a long history of ATF misinterpreting the firearms import law. They've issued a study which suggests that shotguns with certain features shouldn't be importable. This is supposed to be done under the so-called supporting purposes test, which we can talk about in a little more detail, I guess. But basically they're saying that guns with certain features are not particularly suitable for or readily adaptable to sporting purposes, and they won't. If this is finalized, those guns won't be importable.
Now, this whole sporting purposes thing, it's kind of been the criteria used to determine, you know, what guns they're going to allow and what guns they're not going to allow. Is it just basically come down to hunting purposes, or do they allow for such things as competition? I've heard in the past that they consider three-gun competition not a competition but combat training.
Well, exactly. That's a very interesting issue, and it goes to the heart of the matter. The sporting purposes test it was enacted as part of the Gun Control Act of '68. It was really intended to block the importation of surplus military rifles, and also of certain inexpensive handguns. But since then, it has been terribly abused, especially with respect to semi-auto firearms. Just to give a brief rundown on a couple of those, right after the Gun Control Act was passed, what was ATF's predecessor agency had a working group back then that looked at certain semi-auto rifles, such as the variants of the G3 and FAL designs, and said that in fact these are suitable for sporting purposes. Or adaptable to sporting purposes, the second part of the test that's very important here. And they allowed them to be imported for about 20 years. Then in 1989, the Bureau banned importation of certain semi-auto rifles, including those exact same guns, saying that they weren't used for organized marksmanship competition and they wouldn't be recommended by hunting guides. So they took a two-prong approach there. But the important point is you know, the agency is supposed to follow the law, and the law says generally recognized as particularly suitable for or readily adaptable to sporting purposes. Well, they focus on generally recognized and say basically that they don't recognize it. They really give short shrift to whether the guns are adaptable to sporting purposes. And then they also use a very narrow definition of sporting purposes. And as you mentioned, for example, in 1989, they said that things like practical rifle competition, as it was really called then, three-gun was kind of in its early days, I guess. But they said that that wasn't really a sport, that it was combat training, military and police combat training, and it wouldn't be recognized as a sport. Now, of course, despite that assessment by the agency, or maybe because of that assessment, the sport really took off, as a lot of your listeners will know and probably participate in it. But in this current shotgun study, the agency is obviously very well aware of that and sort of says, well, we recognize that this is growing, but we don't think, but if we changed our view on practical shooting, then we'd have to change our policy on rifles, and a study on shotguns doesn't seem like the right place to change the policy on rifles. Well, that seems pretty circular. I mean, if the question is whether something's suitable for sporting purposes, you've got to know what's a sport. I think any reasonable shooter, people shooting for prizes and money, wearing sponsored shirts, following rules, using official targets, and so on, sure looks like a sport to me.
Yeah, looks like a duck, walks like a duck. Test.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you said earlier, this is not law yet. It is now under a phase where they're accepting comments on it. Is that correct?
That's correct. It is. It was proposed on January 27th, and there is a public comment period open until May 1st. For all of the particulars on that, you can go to our website at www.nraila.org/shotgun study. Just spell it out all one word. There's an article about it and a link to the study and all the comment information.
Now, we as citizens are allowed to comment during this, right? We can send a letter in, we can sit down, write a letter and send it in, and it actually will matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Agencies read these comments. If they fail to respond to comments, at least in a formal rulemaking process, this is a little bit different from that. In a formal rulemaking process, they really have to allow for, explain themselves as to every comment that's received. Strongly encourage that all ARFCOM users, NRA members, gun owners, everyone who cares about the Second Amendment, comment on this. Both about the actual use of these guns for sporting purposes, because maybe it's not generally recognized, as they say, just because not enough people have pointed it out. but also to make clear the view that. The view that this is just a total misinterpretation of the law.
Yeah, it really is a misinterpretation of the law in a case of a bureaucracy, expanding itself to make itself more relevant, I guess, which is the purpose of all bureaucracies.
I should point out, by the way, that we've talked so far mainly about the law that's on the books, but we haven't talked about the higher law that's also on the books, which is the Constitution. And you know, I don't expect that it'll get a lot of attention from ATF in this context, but there is a very serious constitutional argument about the sporting purposes test in general. I mean, clearly the Second Amendment wasn't intended to protect sports, and so especially in light of the Heller decision, which said that the Second Amendment protects all bearable arms, and that the inherent right of self-defense is central to the Second Amendment right. There's good reason to doubt whether a sporting purposes test is constitutionally valid.
And I'm glad you brought that up. This is a question that I've kind of been rattling around in the back of my skull for a while. Is there anything that you know of in the works to challenge that sporting purposes?
Not in this context yet, because the government hasn't finalized any ban. No one's been harmed by it yet. So legally, you can't get into court until someone's had an import permit denied or something of that nature.
Okay, but maybe the sporting purposes, as it has been related to something else, there hasn't been anything, not just the shotguns, but anything that's come along that could be challenged on?
There have been a couple of challenges in other contexts. I don't recall all the cases, but not successful.
Okay. It's something that needs to be challenged. The shall not be infringed is pretty clear language in my book.
I agree. And in fact, there has been legislation introduced in the past to appeal it, and that may well happen again if this moves forward.
Okay. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk with you about, John, was something that just came to my attention last week. There is a bill in the House of Representatives, H.R. 1093, called the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosive Reform Act. This was brought by Representative Steve King from Iowa and Jason Altmaier from Pennsylvania. And to me, this was amazing to actually see this type of legislation get serious talk. Now, every year it seems like there's a little bit of talk about something like this, but this year it seems like it's actually got legs.
Well, it's had some pretty good legs in the past, and we're hoping it'll move again. In the 109th Congress, let me step back a little bit and give you a little history. This is actually a combination of a couple of bills that were introduced in about 2006, I think, 2005, 2006, 2007, I don't recall, unfortunately. It was in the 109th Congress, so I think it was 06. But and that actually passed the House by a huge margin, 277 to 131 in 2006. It was very widely supported, at 63 Democratic supporters. Then a few years later, in the last Congress, the previous reform bill that had passed was combined with a separate bill on some other issues and gained co-sponsorship from a majority of the House of Representatives, 243 members of Congress, as co-sponsors. And it was also introduced last time for the first time in the Senate. It's supported by, among other people, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee in the last Congress.
Now, you say this in the past has gotten a lot of support. What has been the hang-up to keep it from actually going all the way through and getting signed?
Well, it is always hard to get a major piece of reform legislation forward. From 07 until last year, partisan control had something to do with it, I think it's fair to say. The House, you can't really just move forward with legislation. You know, House members don't have the same initiative as senators do, or don't have the same rights to offer amendments, basically. So if the leadership of the Congress and the leadership of the Rules Committee and so on is opposed, then they can bottle things up more easily. It didn't stop it from gaining a lot of support, but it did stop it from getting floor time.
Now, as I read on NRAILA.org, some of the provisions of the bill, there's a whole host of provisions. In your mind, what are some of the most important things that this bill would change?
I think the single most important provision of this bill is to clarify what a willful violation of the law is for purposes of of dealer license revocation proceedings and other punishments that are available or that would be available. Currently, a dealer can only have one punishment for violation of the law. The ATF has no choice except to revoke the dealer's license. Under HR 1093, they would have other options. They could suspend the license or impose a fine. The fines are limited to prevent it from being death by a thousand cuts. But in any event, none of those can be imposed unless there's a willful violation, quote unquote. But the problem until now has been that the government considers very small violations to be willful violations, even if they don't result in any harm. No gun is sold to any criminal. Every gun that the dealer sells is completely traceable, and so on. They say it's a willful violation, basically, if the dealer was warned once and then did it again. They treat that as proof of intent. Well, it's not proof of intent. There was one case in Ohio where a dealer had some violations, and he had a what's called a warning conference where ATF sits down with him and goes over past the violations and so on. And then he on his next inspection, they found some additional violations, and they went to revoke his license. And that was ultimately upheld in the courts based on transposed serial numbers in three or basically typos. It was handwritten, but basically he got serial numbers wrong on, I think, three or four guns out of 12 guns sold in a single transaction, and that was enough to for the government to win in court.
Oh, wow.
So this would change the definition of willful to mean that it's only a willful violation if the person knew his legal duties and intentionally broke the law. I think that's
okay.
The most important thing, because that would help ensure that there are dealers for all of us who care about guns to buy guns from.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, let's say this does pass. It passes the House. It passes the Senate. It ends up just hitting a brick wall at the White House.
Well, that depends. There are a lot of different ways to skin the cat on Capitol Hill, offering things as an amendment and so on. You might have thought that concealed carry in national parks would have hit a brick wall in 2009, but it didn't.
Well, we can only hope. We can only hope. Now, before I let you go, I just want to ask you officially on the air. Can we call you back again next time there's a major legal issue coming down the pipe?
I'd be happy to.
I'd appreciate you taking some time away from the family to educate myself and our listeners about what's going on with this BATFE reform law and the shotgun ruling, which that working committee thing still kind of boggles my mind, but...
There's more to that than we could possibly go into in this show. So I would I would recommend everyone go to our website at www.nraila.org/shotgun study and get those comments in by May 1st.
Comments in by May 1st. You heard it straight from the NRA ILA Research and Information Division Director, John Fraser. Thanks a lot, John. I appreciate it and look forward to talking to you again.
My pleasure, Don. Thank you, and y'all keep up the good work.
Thank you. And we're going to move right along here on Radio Free ARFCOM. Before we get to our next guest, I would like to remind everybody of the call-in numbers if you have any questions. Our next guest is Mike Vanderbo. He is the blogger of Sipsy Street Irregulars.blogspot.com, I believe. Make sure I have that correct address. But Mike Vanderbo was instrumental in bringing to light some of the facts of the Project Gunrunner debacle that has become such a huge story. And to me, I can't believe some of the things that have come out during this story. And we're going to get into that with Mike here in just a minute. I just want to give out these numbers if you've got any questions for him. Call in 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. So please call in. There are some other call-in numbers. You, of course, can get those at the BBS ar15radio.com or at ar15.com/content/radio. All the numbers are up there. So please, if you've got a question, feel free to call in. Mike Vanderbilt, are you on the line with us, sir?
I am, sir, yes.
Did I get your URL correct? I believe I did.
Oh, I think so, but, you know, just punch in Gunwalker, and it'll probably take you to my site or David Kodria's site, and you can inform yourself from the links there.
Now, you and David Kodria have really teamed up to bring this amazing, amazing story to light. I know most of my listeners are familiar with it, but I don't think people really understand how you have turned an investigative journalist and just, you know, used your sources and found this story. Let's go back to the beginning. How did you first hear about this? Where did you first learn of this?
Well, David and I have been working on various smaller ATF scandals for a couple of years now. And in the process of doing that, we made contacts within and without the agency. And and we gradually built up some street cred with some of the agents who have been butting heads with management. And so this structure that we'd set up, sort of a net, was there, and the scandal, the scandal, fell into our laps. I first heard about it from some sources inside ATF before Christmas, about a week before Christmas. And then it was mentioned on an ATF website, cleanupatf.org, just the rumor, nothing more, that Border Patrol Agent Brian Terry had been murdered with a weapon that the ATF had allowed to walk south of the border. Instead of interdicting weapons, they had been told to allow them to circulate in order to pump up the numbers, according to what they were told by their bosses at the time. They had been fighting against this policy for almost a year for Brian Terry's death. But when he was killed, they no longer held back, and they wanted to contact somebody, anybody, press or a senator, to get their story out. And one of the things that David and I did early on, I think, that paid dividends, was we insisted that they not go to the press and that they not even contact the senators, but let us get the senators to contact them, thus giving them protection, whistleblower protection under the law. If a senator asks you, a federal government employee, a question, a direct question that's not covered by, you know, the classification laws, you're bound to answer them. And so we did that. It took us a couple of weeks to get the senator's attention, probably the longest 2 weeks of my life, except for my first marriage. But we finally got first Senator Sessions folks, and then Senator Grassley's folks vectored on to the whistleblowers. And it's all been downhill since then, you know.
Yeah, it seems like
up speed. I don't know if you saw the CBS News tonight, but the other agencies have now been implicated in the scandal, including Department of Homeland Security and ICE and the Marshals Service, and it's picking up speed, and it will continue to. Agent Yaquez, who was on CBS tonight, called it, and it's no understatement, overstatement, certainly, and the worst scandal that the ATF has ever had.
Yeah, it's got to be, especially they've got blood of a federal agent, and who knows how much blood of Mexican nationals on their hands with these guns that were literally, like you call it, just walked across the border, just let them walk. And you hear the details of it, and it seems like every day, either you or David is putting forth something new. This is new. This the story. This is breaking. This is breaking. And I look at it and I think, okay, the story's broke. We see it's a big debacle. We see that it's criminal. No question about that. But what are the realistic, projections of someone actually taking the fall for this? Is it going to just be a patsy, a fall guy that gets thrown under the bus, or are we going to actually be able to get to the people that are responsible?
Well, we'll see. We have promises of hearings now. Daryl Issa is on the job. Letters have been exchanged with Acting Director Melson and Eric Holder demanding specific documents. It's sort of interesting how specific the documents they are asking for. It reminds you of the lawyer who never asks a question he doesn't know the answer to. Some of the stuff that the agents have brought out has just been astounding. The second CBS piece actually had surveillance videotape of them watching straw buyers come out of a gun dealer that they not only had set up to allow this stuff to happen, but were paying him as a confidential informant.
Oh,
so
wow.
He was making money. He was making money both ends. and it was one of his weapons that killed Brian Terry. I can only imagine what's going to happen when Brian Terry's family finally decides to seek legal recompense for the damage that was done. I'm sure the gun dealer will wish he never took a government dime.
Yeah, I think maybe the family will be the owners of a new gun shop.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, this is. It's an amazing story. It goes very deep. I mean, when 3 weeks ago or more, a reporter, I won't characterize who, but a reporter called me and said, you know, this is, I've been being told that this is as big as Watergate. And I said, nobody died at the Watergate Hotel. You know, this is hundreds of deaths so far, probably. And could be into the many thousands. I mean, the number of rifles that were quote-unquote walked continues to rise. We continue to get stories from other states besides Arizona. But we could be talking somewhere, and I was chatting with an agent the other day. He says he thinks it's at least 5,000 or 6,000.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And just so your listeners understand, this was not where, an ATF special agent in charge of Phoenix got up one morning and said, I'm going to create my own foreign policy. You know, this was a deliberate policy. My sources say that it was crafted at the highest levels of the United States government, that it was a deliberate plot, if you will, to subvert the Second Amendment, to restrict the rights of American gun owners, of gun stores and gun shows, and all for by creating or at least blowing up a crisis in Mexico. It actually, if you look at it from an intelligence agency point of view, it was quite brilliantly and cold-bloodedly crafted. The only thing that blew it apart was the brave whistleblowers who decided, finally, they weren't going to go along with it anymore. But, you know, if you look at the pressure that we were getting and are still getting from the gun prohibitionist people that, well, we have to plug the gun show loophole, which, of course, is newspeak for making sure that no individual in the country can transfer a firearm without the permission of the government, even to the point of you giving your granddaddy's .22 to your grandson. You know, according to their plugging, they want us to get permission of the government whenever we do that. Well, that's their plugging the gun show loophole. You know, many of your listeners may not understand that.
Yeah.
But they actually thought that you know, this would work. And it sure could have, except for the agents.
And it's all the more, you know, interesting from a conspiracy standpoint when you look at how quiet the administration has been about gun control. We all know Obama was Gun Salesman of the Year for a couple of years when he first took office, and he was just so quiet. He never brought it up. You know, he might talk about it in passing here and there, but never tried to sponsor any legislation or get anything done. And you look at this this thing that's come out, and you kind of go, holy cow, maybe that's why they were so quiet. They had this whole
exactly.
thing in the works from the get-go.
Exactly. It's breathtaking. But then again, you know, they felt that they had their hands on all of the levers. I mean, who controls the crime statistics and the gun traces coming out of Mexico? Well, the ATF. You know, it was, and the other thing too is that if the thing went south, and I'm getting some stories from guys in the intelligence community now that are actually paying attention to this, I'm getting some feedback that actually the ATF made the perfect foil for them, because if everything went south, they weren't really invested that much in the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And in fact, Janet Napolitano has always, since she took office, cast a covetous eye at how she might increase the number of her agents on the street. And so the thought was that even if the ATF became discredited, they'd simply fold the ATF, take the gun law enforcement, put it into Department of Homeland Security, and now you've got tens of thousands of political policemen running around, you know, doing the gun business, and they're even less accountable than the ATF. I mean,
yeah.
You want to talk about scary.
Yeah, that is scary. I read on your website, actually, where you that was brought up, and you were like, it's better the devil I know in rehab than the one I don't, or something along those lines.
Exactly. And you know, I gotta say, too, I spent 20 years opposing the ATF in various ways. And yet it wasn't until the last year or so when I began to run into these honest ATF agents. It was frankly something I didn't think existed. You know, I'd been seeing the victims of ATF misbehavior for years and years. But when I started running into actually honest agents, guys that they didn't care about paperwork violations, they just wanted to put, you know, evil bad guys who shouldn't have weapons in jail. And they were coming into conflict with their own management. It wasn't until I met them that I changed my opinion a little bit about them as well. And I apparently in the process I've built up some street cred, because when they needed us, they came to us.
Yeah, I admit it. I thought it was very unusual bedfellows when I heard Mike Vanderbo and working with ATF agents. And I was like, holy cow, that's pretty much the last thing I ever thought I'd hear.
Well, you know, Shakespeare said there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy.
Yeah,
life
exactly.
is always more complicated than you think it is.
Exactly. Now, we should take a moment and applaud these agents that, you know, had the balls actually to step forward, because let's be honest, history has kind of shown that the ATF in particular does not look positively on its own whistleblowers and does not treat them very well.
No, certainly not. And you know, these guys knew that up front. I mean, you know, understand this. It's not like, you know, they were babes in the woods. They've been watching how their agency treats whistleblowers over the years. And they also understood, you know, the high stakes of this, how high it goes. You know, the folks who are in the Obama administration, the experienced ones, cut their teeth on scandals in the Clinton administration. For example, the assistant U.S. attorney in charge of the Justice Department's criminal division, a guy named Lanny Brewer, who our sources say is smack dab in the middle of this, he was actually one of Bill Clinton's defense attorneys during the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Now he finds himself on the griddle, and, you know, all
well,
by
he's,
his,
he's,
self.
He's very high up in the Justice Department now, correct?
He is. I mean, there's only Eric Holder higher than him in terms of, I mean, he runs one of the divisions. He reports directly to Eric Holder. You know, we've got reports that at the White House that in the beginning meetings, in the early meetings, that Rahm Emanuel was a key player. And, you know, Rahm Emanuel isn't sitting in the room without the knowledge of the President of the United States.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's a big scandal. It's huge. It's I would say it's every bit as big as Watergate, and every bit as cynical. I mean, you know, they sent the burglars to the Watergate to find out what they could find out in furtherance of a conspiracy to steal the 1972 election, which ironically they didn't even have to do that, but they did it. And now here we see the ATF being used as a tool to subvert the very laws that they are sworn to uphold. They took an agency that's supposed to interdict weapons going south and made them pushers.
Yeah, it really is just one of those stories that you're just like, you don't believe there can actually be conspiracies like this in the government. But here it is, and we've got the facts. And it's amazing the silence, the mainstream media. I mean, there has been a few reports, as you said, on CBS. But for the most part, this is a huge story. This is one of the biggest stories of the decade. And we can only hear about it, you know, online from bloggers, you know,
Well, I mean, at some point, it'll take off. You must give CBS News full credit, though. It's
Absolutely.
Not just, you know, can you get a reporter that knows the story in order to work it, or the right producer, you know, to help her, in this case, Cheryl Atkinson, help her through the story. You know, you're talking about decisions taken at the highest levels of CBS, and they've got to be taking these decisions up to and including the story tonight in absolute opposition to what must be tremendous pressure coming from the White House and from people that they are normally politically very friendly with, but they're still sticking with the story.
Yeah.
You know, and that's amazing to me. I will say that, you know, when CBS came to David and me and said, you know, can you put us in touch with the whistleblowers, they came at us exactly the right way. They had read all our stuff. They were familiar with all of the documents. They asked the right questions. And they were very, very considerate of the agent's safety. And so if you notice, the first thing the CBS put out didn't even have an agent on camera. But they were willing to do that because they felt the story was important enough and they knew that the agents were telling them certainly at least what they believed to be the truth. And they made a gutsy decision and they ran with it. You know, other people were demanding, you know, they'd say, well, you know, here we are, the authorized journalists, and you just give us our sources and we'll check it out and see if you're lying. You know,
yeah,
pretty much the way it was. And, you know, what we did, because we felt we had a duty to do it, was we'd say, look, no, it doesn't work that way. We don't give you our sources are sacrosanct. But if they want to talk to you, we'll give you their contact. We'll give them your contact information. And
right.
So that's the way we did it. And when it finally comes out, you'll be amazed at some of these high-end muckety-muck journalists who went to the agents and tried, and the agents were totally underwhelmed by them, found them to be lazy, stupid, and so full of themselves that they couldn't quite get the story straight. But CBS came at it with exactly the right attitude at exactly the right time, and now they're the ones that are going to end up with the Emmys.
Yeah, and I'm really disappointed in Fox News on this. They're supposed to be the champions of the quote-unquote fair and balanced, and they just I mean, they've almost been silent on this whole thing.
Well, they were the ones that were insisting up front, and we've dealt with a number of people at Fox. I mean, they've sort of rotated people through the story. But they were the ones who first said, much like CNN, well, we got to have agents on camera, or we're just not going to do the story. You know, and we're trying to explain to them, do you not understand, you know, what the consequences are for these agents? Do you not understand, you know, the huge forces that are at work on this story? I mean, you know, if you did, you wouldn't be making these demands up front. But, you know, they get used to doing things a certain way and thinking that, you know, well, we're the media and our excrement doesn't stink.
Let's talk a little bit more about the actual story itself. From what I've read, this has actually, the Project Gunrunner or whatever has actually, well, I guess not the gun running, but the Fast and Furious part of it or whatever has been going on since actually the end of the Bush administration, but guns didn't start actually being allowed to walk until after Obama took office. Is that correct?
Yeah. How this started out was, the principal character at the beginning in 2008 and then on through 2009, 2010, was a guy that David Codrey and I dubbed Gunwalker Bill Newell. Bill Newell was the ATF special agent in charge of Phoenix. But in 2008, while the Bush administration was still around, he was running the Tucson office. And out of the Tucson office, he ran what amounted to sort of a pilot project with this. Okay? He played around with the idea that, well, you know, if we let these things get a little farther than we're used to, then maybe we'll find, you know, Mr. Big. You know,
right.
We'll find the cartel. Right? But it wasn't part of the plan to let these things go south of the border. Now, subsequent to the thing, they discovered that that's exactly where they went. And then, of course, in November 2008, Obama is elected, takes office in January 2009. Eric Holder proposes in February 2009 that we have an assault weapons ban and promptly has his head handed to him by everybody from the Blue Dog Democrats to Nancy Pelosi and Rahm Emanuel. But, and so they back off of that, but they didn't back off of wanting it. They just decided we're going to find a way around this. And the answer was to take an existing program called Project Gunrunner and break it down into smaller components, one of which was Fast and Furious that was run out of the Phoenix office. But there are others that were run out of other offices, and we will find out as events play out here and as people are put under oath, as more people come forward. And I understand that there may be as many as 2 dozen ATF agents who have now approached Senator Grassley.
Oh, wow.
And shared with him their stories, their documents. This is achieved critical mass now. It is not going away, and you're going to be hearing a lot more about it.
Now, what has been the Mexican government response to this? Because, I mean, let's be honest, this is almost an act of war. I mean,
you know, my father once told me that I was smart enough to start a war. he wasn't complimentary, but he said you know you're smart enough to start a war, but you ought to put your mind to other things. Well, I haven't started a war yet, but apparently I have facilitated a diplomatic incident, because the Mexicans are livid. It seems that, and that's the biggest part of the story, is that up front the Obama administration said we are not going to inform the Mexicans, and yet there were people tasked to do exactly that for Gunrunner. Guys like Agent Jaquez, who was the assistant ATF attaché in Mexico. I think he was in Ciudad Juarez. Darren Gill, a huge stand-up guy who was the ATF attaché in Mexico City. They didn't inform him of what was going on. He found out about it through his informal communication channels within the ATF. He calls up the Phoenix office and demands of Gunwalker Bill, what in the world are you doing? You're violating treaties. These weapons are going to be killing people down here. And he says it's on orders of headquarters. So Gill thinks that he's lying. He calls headquarters and verifies, in fact, that this is a program that headquarters has signed off on. And headquarters doesn't want him to know about it, and headquarters doesn't want him to tell the Mexicans about it. He put up such a fuss, and they realized they couldn't trust him. They forced him into early retirement, and he left the agency on the 31st of December last year.
Oh, wow.
Of course, that was just a couple of weeks after Brian Terry was murdered, and the whole thing started to trickle out. But my understanding is that Mr. Gill may indeed be able to put a number of these people in jail, because he was privy to a lot of meetings that the lower agents were not.
Oh, wow. Now, we are promised hearings. Has there been a date set? Has there been...
There has not, and I urge your listeners to keep pounding on your congressman, keep pounding on the NRA. You know, the NRA came late to this. The NRA came reluctantly to this. But the only way we're going to have hearings, and have hearings soon, is if there's pressure from below, from the NRA membership and from the the constituents of the various congressmen who are on the House committees. I wouldn't at this point waste my time on the Senate, because frankly, the Democrats control the Senate, and even though Senator Grassley has done an amazing job of pushing this thing along and, you know, getting the guys protection and you know, pulling documents out, and he can't call a hearing on his own. The Democrats are the only ones who can call a hearing in the Senate. The GOP can make things happen in the House. And so if I understand correctly, the Congress critters are back home this week. So they're well within reach of your listeners. And I would just urge your listeners to get a hold of these guys, to demand that the House schedule early hearings to find out what in the world was going on with Project Gunwalker and the scandal.
And I do believe there will be some town hall meetings in the next couple of weeks, and that is a perfect format to go and let your voice be heard in front of some cameras, in front of the public, and call these senators out and force them basically to listen to us.
Absolutely. Great idea.
Now, there actually has been some fallout already as far as people losing their jobs. I understand a former U.S. ambassador to Mexico has had to resign predominantly due to pressure over this scandal, correct?
That was the straw that broke the camel's back. The Mexicans were already, especially the Mexican president, was already upset at him. But the amazing thing is that all three major parties in Mexico, who never agree on anything, agree that they are needing answers on what happened with Fast and Furious. They want to know, you know, why these weapons were allowed to walk south. And they have already instructed their government, which apparently the Senate down there can, to recall their ambassador for an explanation to the Senate. I don't know if that's happened yet, but it was a foregone conclusion that the U.S. ambassador was going to lose his job over this. It is interesting, and it's been pointed out to me, that the fellow we're talking about is a professional State Department fellow. Usually ambassadors get their jobs as, you know, being donors to the president's campaign or, you know, friends of some prominent person in the party. Mexico, for some reason, they chose a career diplomat. And I suppose maybe they knew a little that he didn't when they put him in the job, because they're not out a political donor or a friend now that this thing is broken into the public domain.
Very convenient for them, wasn't it?
Well, that seems to have worked. It's amazing how, you know, when you start playing with these pieces, they all seem to fall into some sort of order.
Yeah, it really is amazing, you know, how this whole thing, like you said, is just all the pieces just falling into place. I also read on your website the man that you just referred to, Bill Newell, has actually kind of been missing in action now.
the dissident ATF agents who run cleanupatf.org actually put his face on a milk carton after what he was. You know, the ironic thing, something that I made much of early in the scandal, was that Newell had always coveted Gill's job as attaché in Mexico City. And so he was actually picked by headquarters after they forced Gill to retire. He was actually picked as Gill's successor. But I sent Newell an email, and I said, look, you know, are you sure you want to do this? Mexico's a dangerous place. And, you know, I'd like to see you around to testify for the hearings, but I'm sure there's lots of people in the administration that wouldn't want you around. So I think, you know, you might want to reconsider this. And now apparently he's fallen off the radar. No one's quite sure where he's at. I'm sure he's somewhere where headquarters wants him, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I guarantee the last place he wants to be is in Mexico City right now. That's
I would think so, yeah.
Probably not the safest.
You know, I try to be friendly to all these guys, whether they consider me their friend or not. You know,
Oh, that's funny. Now, Senator Grassley's been kind of carrying the torch of the U.S. Senate. Senator Issa's hopped on board now. There's been an exchange of letters back and forth between the senators and people in the Justice Department. Does the Justice Department really feel they've got even a leg to stand on, or are they just covering tracks and just trying to shovel this under the rug?
Well, our understanding is that the operative plan right now is something like what my grandfather once told me: when in peril or in doubt, run in circles, scream and shout. These guys, they really don't know whether to defecate or go blind. They at least at the ATF level. Now the adults are starting to be paying attention to this, especially Hillary. It's always been sort of an open bet with me and some of the guys in the intelligence agencies that I talk to as to what the percentage is that Hillary will jump in this and throw Obama under the bus and throw Holder under the bus and then declare as a candidate for 2012. Now that she's got her own war, I'm not sure that's maybe very likely if she's getting what she wants. But she certainly did say that she wasn't going to serve in a second Obama administration. She said that like four times the other day. So I suppose we'll see. But you understand that, you know, these things begin in meetings, and bureaucracies must consult with the other bureaucracies who hold sway over some part of it. So being that it dealt with Mexico, State was certainly consulted, as CBS reported that ICE was consulted and DHS was consulted and DEA and the Marshals Service. I mean, CBS broke all that ground today. And I will tell you that the FBI is actually the agency that's doing a very, very good job of covering up the actual circumstances of Brian Terry's death.
Wow.
He was killed on 14 December. They have still released no information about that murder, except that it wasn't fratricide and that he was armed initially with a shotgun with beanbag rounds and was going up against, you know, guys with AKs, provided left-handedly by the ATF.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing that they have said. And so, you know, you must wonder, especially when they got around to releasing. There were four people taken into custody at that shooting scene, and the FBI declared three of them that were unwounded as not having anything to do with Terry's murder, and they pumped him back over the border.
Oh, wow. So those guys are gone.
Yeah, getting rid of the witnesses, okay? You know, put them back where, A, they'll probably be killed, but B, certainly out of reach of Senator Grassley. And they did this when they knew that Grassley was looking to talk to him.
Right. That's just
amazing. And the fourth
amazing.
Guy, who was shot in the foot, still has not been charged. No one has been charged with the murder of Brian Terry, even though they knew the day afterwards where the rifle that killed him came from.
Wow. This has just turned out to be an amazing story. We're almost out of time. I did want to talk to you one last thing about the circumstances of Brian Terry's murder. The whole beanbag round thing, I know you have a lot of sources in the government and different agencies. Is this standard operating procedure? Is this what they're forcing our agents to go to war against these cartels with, non-lethal rounds?
That's what a Border Patrolman told me. And you know, there's another bit of information that is perhaps worse than that. When the helicopters came in to fly out the wounded, the policy is to fly out the illegals first, regardless of state of condition of the American wounded. And so the illegal who was shot in the foot got the first chopper. Brian Terry died on the way to the hospital in the second chopper.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I'm speechless. I'm literally over here speechless. There's got to be some big heads that roll on this. Napolitano has to know the rules of engagement that she's putting these guys in, and it's criminal. It's criminal to send these guys to war against firearms that we provide the cartels with non-lethal pounds. It's just amazing.
Yeah, kind of ironic, ain't it? We're arming the enemy
yeah,
just to make a political point on gun control. I mean, just understand that. Let that sink in. This is a cynical, bloody-minded policy to subvert the Second Amendment and not caring how many dead people they pile up on the way.
Yeah, it's amazing. Oh, it's just amazing. Well, Mike, we're out of time, and I apologize for us not having more time. When more breaks on this and you do your due diligence and you keep these stories coming, can we get you back on the show to talk a little bit more as more
comes
out?
I'll be happy to, sure.
Yeah, you've been a great guest. We've had you on this show now 3 times. I love listening to you. I love your website. For the listeners that don't know, I'm sure most ARFCOMers know about Sipsey Street Irregulars. The website, sipseystreetirregulars.blogspot.com. Mike Vanderbos is his name, blogger turned investigative journalist. Hold their feet to the fire, Mike. Please hold their feet to the fire for us.
I'm doing the best I can.
And we just want to thank Mike for being on the show tonight, taking some time out of his personal life. I want to thank John Frazier from the National Rifle Association, NRA ILA Research and Information Division. Joe DeBurgolis, as usual, opened the show up, NRA board member, ARFCOM staff member. I want to thank all our listeners out there. Please check us out at radiofreearfcom.wordpress.com. Sign up for the AR15.com newsletter at AR15.com on the homepage. Please go to our Facebook site, Radio Free ARFCOM at Facebook. Just do a search there. You'll find us. It was a great show. I just can't wait to see where this story goes, this Project Gunrunner. It's just amazing. it's amazing to listen to some of the facts regarding this case. It's just mind-boggling. You think conspiracies like this can't happen? Well, one just did. It just broke right in our laps. It's just amazing to hear this. Once again, I want to thank everybody for listening. We will be back in a couple of weeks with a brand new version of Radio Free ARFCOM Going Rogue. I want to thank Seth, my producer behind the scenes, making everything run smooth as silk. And I want to say God bless the great republic that is the United States of America.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.